From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show. This episode of Fragmented is brought to you by Bitrise. Bitrise helps you build and operate better apps faster. By effortlessly combining the services and tools mobile developers love, they make development easier, more scalable, and take away the fear of change that causes development processes to stagnate. In 80% of the cases, Bitrise fully configures an initial workflow based on the contents of your repository. Automatically, Bitrise integrates with over 240 services, tools, and processes right out of the box. With minimal configuration required, it's great because instead of wasting valuable time on maintaining your automation workflows, developers can focus on building and improving the applications that they develop every single day. In short, Bitrise enables mobile development teams to scale quickly and efficiently. Half of all mobile unicorn startups use and continue to use Bitrise as they scale from small teams to billion-dollar enterprises. And onboarding and familiarizing new developers with Bitrise doesn't require help from a more veteran developer and a complete development team. Usually, they can be onboarded within a single release. Bitrise allows you to iterate and improve on your mobile development process like you'd iterate on the actual software that you're developing. You can build custom build bots, tools, integrations, etc. You can call the Bitrise API over numerous times throughout the day to enable development processes that are thought up by the smartest minds in app development. Now, don't just build better apps. Build a better app development processes. Sign up for an exquisite pair of Bitrise branded socks. If you're interested, you can go to go.bitrise.io/fragmented. Again, that's go.bitrise.io/fragmented.
Hey, folks. I am really excited to share a very new sponsor for this week. So the sponsor for this week is Vettery. Vettery is an online hiring marketplace that is changing the way people hire and get hired. Now, you might ask, well, I mean, I've heard of other similar companies like this. What's so different about them? Well, for starters, the access is exclusive. Once you're live on their marketplace, top employers can view your profile and extend interview requests via email. The other good thing about them is they're also specialized in the tech space. So the kind of jobs and positions that you'll see are the ones that you probably have the most context around. So software developers, data scientists, product managers, etc. You can also do things like set preferences for your desired location. And also, like, if you are someone who's looking to find other like engineers and other like great people to work with, you can set like all kinds of different tweaks like years of experience, top skills, professional background, and a whole bunch of other things. They also have like about 20,000 companies that they partner with on this platform. So that's amazing. It ranges from like innovative startups to, you know, the Fortune 500 firms. So, and they're also across US, Canada, and the UK. Now, here's the best thing. They are absolutely free to join. So you can go and sign up on vettery.com/fragmented. Vettery is kind of hard to pronounce in audio, but it's actually easy to type. So I'll just like spell it out. It's V-E-T-T-E-R-Y. So that's vettery.com/fragmented. And if you accept a job through Vettery, you get a $300 bonus on top of that. So again, if you can go to the link vettery.com/fragmented and try them out, then it helps support the show. And also they'll know you came from us and they'll know that you're interested in a service like this. Anyways, my thanks to Vettery for sponsoring this show. Hey, folks. So literally tomorrow morning, I'm going to be giving a conference talk in Poland that I'm really, really excited about. And instead of practicing for my talk, I thought it would be a great idea to record a quick episode on how I give a technical talk. Because if there's one thing you should know, I am a serial procrastinator to the next level, and I love postponing up until the very last moment. I did send out a tweet and I got a whole bunch of fantastic questions from a lot of listeners asking a lot of really good and smart questions. If I didn't mention your name, I'm really sorry, but know that I looked to each and one of those tweets to draw inspiration for a lot of ideas and explanations for this episode. Almost one of the most common questions that I got from a lot of people is, hey, what exactly is your process? if you have an idea for a talk, how do you actually go about specifically preparing for that talk, right? And I love this question. And it's mostly because I have a really peculiar process, but it seems to work really well for me. So I'm really excited to actually share that with you. The very first step for me is obviously coming up with the idea for the talk, right? And typically, I always have like two kinds of talks that I like to give. One is where I tend to know the topic well enough that I want to like definitely go and share that topic with more people. For example, I'm giving my talk tomorrow on unidirectional state flow on iOS and Android. I've been working on this for almost like 6 to 8 months now. This is a topic I know really, really well. And it's a topic I think that is better explained visually in a presentation or a talk, right? Because as good as of a job I can try to do with Don through the audio medium, sometimes the best way to demonstrate ideas are just through the visual medium, right? So these are one kind of topics that I like to talk about. The second type of topic is ones I actually don't know anything about. And this is more because it acts as a forcing function. For example, I'm trying to think of a good idea. Oh, at one point of time, I always thought that I would like to give a talk on JNI, like, you know, the Java Native Interface or whatever it stands for, because there aren't too many good resources out there about it. And it seems like something that a lot of people want to know about and that I also don't know anything about. So I would technically like to have given that talk these days, of course, like with Kotlin and a lot of the other stuff, I've lost a lot of that interest. But that's just like, I'm trying to think of examples of other topics that I don't know anything about that I would like to talk about. I've done this with camera in the past. Like I've given talks about like the camera APIs in the very, very early days. It was not very pleasant to work with, to say the least, at least the Android camera APIs. So I remember giving talks about how like one can deal with that. All right, so that's the first step, coming up with the topic. The second big interesting step for me, and this is the one that I think I like the most in my process, is what I call the sticky notes step. So what I do is I have two bunches of sticky notes, and this is like the standard post-it sticky notes that you guys probably have seen. I have, they're usually of two colors, like the one I did for this talk was like a bunch of yellow post-it notes and a bunch of green post-it notes. I will try to share a picture. Hopefully I took a picture of this for this talk. I'll show you the pictures that I took of this post-it notes collection that I did. And the idea here is I use one color for my primary points. Let me try to explain this better. Say you attend my talk tomorrow and you walk away from the talk, my hope is that there's at least three or four or hopefully five major takeaway points that you go away from this talk with, right? Those, I'll basically put them down in like yellow sticky notes. Those are like the primary points. If, you know, you've had a long conference day and you just attended my talk and you walk away from my talk and you can't remember all the details, but there's just those primary concepts that you want to remember, those are the points that I'll put in yellow post-it notes because that's the whole presentation depends on that idea being conveyed well, right? For example, in this talk that I'm about to give, there are like a bunch of major points. One of the major points is that I'm trying to make is you can use any architecture pattern you want, right? It doesn't matter that you're using MVC, MVP, MVVM, MVI. What matters more is that you have solid guiding principles. I'm not going to go into the whole details of that talk, but that idea or that point was a very important one for me. So that's one that I put in the post-it notes. Then obviously like the whole idea of modeling your entire UI as a single function was another important point for this talk. So that's just like an example of like these primary points. Now, I can't just walk up on stage, explain those primary points and then peace out, right? Because that doesn't flow very well. In order for the whole talk to flow in a very pleasant manner, what I have to do then is I have to add a little color and a little context to each of these points. That's when the green post-it notes come in. And so every time I feel like, oh, I need to bridge these points, I need to move from major point one to major point two, I need something to bridge those gaps. Those, I sort of write those ideas in green post-it notes and I stick them. So if you see visually, what I'm trying to do is create like placeholder for my slides in the form of post-it notes. And I usually put this either like on a wall, I put it up on a wall or on my table, and I let it sit for almost 2 to 3 weeks, right? Because I want to think about this. I might suddenly remember an idea as I'm working through, thinking through this whole presentation that I might have forgotten. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember. I also want to talk about this. This is really important, you know? Like the naming conventions for like this like architecture pattern or something like that, where I'm like, oh, I think I need to add these points. There's also like, I'm trying to think of precise examples. Another good one is this idea that I came up with where I felt that view state and just generic state gets confused a lot. And I wanted to make that a little clear. So then I added like another sticky note explaining that idea. You know, so it's over time as you start to think about the topic more, you'll get better ideas. You know, like if you're in the shower and you start to like think about this more, you'll start to get better ideas. I keep writing those on post-it notes and then sticking them in this, right? And also you might think about the same point but have a better mechanism of conveying this. So in those cases, I even scribble on top of the post-it notes behind and on top of that post-it notes with a lot of like information that I'd like to convey in the presentation. So that's basically like the first major step is like to come up with my sticky notes step. The second main step, and again, like this process works for me. I don't necessarily know if it works for everyone, but usually this has worked well for me in the past. So the second major step for me is talking points. So what I is coming up with this file called talking points. I'll explain it a little better. So literally what I do is now that I have these post-it notes, I'll try to almost literally write the entire talk in words to myself. So I'll open up a markdown file or like, you know, a basic text file. And I'll look at these post-it notes and I'll literally try to write the presentation from top to bottom as though I was giving it, right? And the reason I do this and why it's so valuable for me is because conceptually, just looking at those post-it notes, things might make sense. But when I'm actually writing it fully, like in terms of prose, a lot of the gaps start to surface where I was like, wait, that doesn't exactly make sense. And or like, you know, well, I can add that point, but it doesn't bridge it as well as I thought it would. So running through this whole process is like very valuable. So I literally call it talking_points.md, which stands for markdown. And I store this in like my Dropbox folder with like where I start to store all my keynote files. And if you folks are interested, I can actually send you some of these drafts that I did for this talk. It's funny to see like the initial stages and how the presentation ends up looking in the end. So I do that once, right? And that itself is very informative to me. So I do that. I think about the topic more. I give it a day or two. And then I follow up by doing the exact same process all over again, which is like writing a talking_points_2.markdown file, right? And I'll do this again because now that I kind of know where the gaps are, I'll try to like think about where I can plug these gaps and repeat the process again and come up with the whole talking points all over again. I've done this like long enough now where usually by the second talking points, I have a very clear idea of how this presentation is going to go, right? Or like which direction it's going to go. But in the early days, I've had cases where like for some of these talks where it just wasn't clicking for me, I would do like 3 or 4 entire like writing points. I also read a tweet the other day which tries to explain this better. Apparently, Jeff Bezos, he banned presentations or PPTs in Amazon in favor of like, you know, what they call narratives. And the reason was, I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said it's much, much harder to write a good 3-page memo or summary than it is to like come up with a 20 slide PowerPoint, right? And that's like the thing that I don't want to get caught. Like the post-it notes is great. It gives me an idea of the structure, but it doesn't succinctly like draw those holes out, right? By me actually writing the whole thing from top to bottom, it really does a good job of like pointing those gaps and like it helps like convey the story better. So that's like the second major step that I do. Usually by now, what I'm going to start doing is I'm going to start creating my slides, right? A couple of things with respect to slides. I use Keynote completely. I would never go away. If you use a MacBook, the Keynote is the best piece of software you can possibly imagine. I wouldn't recommend anyone use anything else, but obviously not everyone has a Mac. So if you don't, then PowerPoint is also pretty good, I would imagine. But the Keynote is just, the Keynote application is just so beautiful. It works amazingly well. I typically like to keep a theme for my slide. And the way I do this is I've actually over time built sort of my own theme. For those of you who don't know, there's this color scheme I like a lot called San Jose. Actually, if you check my GitHub repository, I have a San Jose theme for IntelliJ, for my terminal, for iTerm. I also have one now that I use for my Keynote slides, right? I've also looked to a lot of other people for inspiration, and you should do that too, because in the end, you want the Keynote, you want like your presentation to be your most authentic self, right? You want it to depict you. It doesn't have to be like somebody else. It doesn't have to look like Steve Jobs' keynotes. It doesn't have to look like any specific person's keynote. It has to look like your keynote, right? And I think that's important. You can always go and draw inspiration from other people. I can tell you some of the people I love, love, love who create amazing keynote slides, right? First is Cyril Motier. I think I've tweeted about this in the past. He is like a master technical talk, like theme creator, so to speak. I'll try to put a link into his speaker deck. You should look at some of his slides. His slides are just gorgeous. They look amazing. And in fact, I think some of my earlier themes were like almost a direct ripoff of him. I, of course, did ask permission. Always do that. If you're trying to use somebody else's theme, especially from a technical talk, like we're all friends here. Just like ping that person and say, hey, I really like your theme. Is it okay if I use it for my talk? They'll be more than happy to say yes, right? I did the exact same thing with Cyril Motier's slides. The other person I draw a lot of inspiration from is this crazy, crazy magician named Nick Butcher. Obviously, you guys should probably know Nick. I don't even know what to say. Look at, like, if you look at his slides, they're like a masterpiece. And so I look to a lot of inspiration from Nick as well to like create my own slides. So at this point, I've sort of created my theme. I kind of know what my theme for the keynote should look like, the different color palettes I'm going to use. I then go about creating placeholder slides where I'm going to cover each of these sections. This is where like that whole post-it notes thing comes in very handy, because what I can do is I can literally just start creating these keynote placeholders and drop just the text there. It doesn't have to be any visuals or animations or like anything. It literally is like slides with bullet points, right? And the advantage of doing this is because now I want to actually start visualizing these things, right? That in combination with my presentation theme is where things start to get interesting. So at this point, I basically add those bullet points. And now and then where I have a very solid idea about what a slide should look like, I'll start to add visuals. I'll start to add like diagrams. I still don't do any of the animations or anything, because here's the thing, at least this is the lesson that I've learned from before. Animations take a long time. And like, you know, even specifics like changing the color of like certain text, the font colors, the opacity, showing code that moves and slides from one way to another, all of that takes a lot of time to do, right? But all of that is polish. That you want to do at the very, very end. There have been times where I worked like literally for a week on a set of slides. And in the final days, I realized that that was just too wordy, right? And I needed to cut off that whole section. So that whole week of work completely gone, like to being useless. So what I try to do is the final polish and like the theme and like the, well, not the theme, but like the final, like the colors of the text, the animations, the positions where each of the text and like code and visual diagrams are located. I leave that right till the very end. Okay, so that is with respect to Keynote. Oh, actually, yes, this is the other point that I wanted to make. Magic move. If you used Keynote, you don't have to actually animate a lot of objects, right? What you typically do is it's like building in Android, right? Like there are two ways to do animations. You can either inform that view how it's supposed to morph by saying, okay, change your radius by X, change your position from X to Y, and that like over this much time interval, and then that specifies how your animation will work. It's probably the best and most efficient way to create an animation. Keynote has something like that too, where you can create actions and make things move from one place to the other. I don't know who it was. Maybe it was Jake Wharton or someone who basically gave this tip. They're like, you know what? For the most part, that level of detail for animations don't matter at all. Instead, what you should do, you can still get really high quality animations. All you have to do is, there's the other form of animating things where you're literally giving a PNG image of what the new state will look like. And you just play these PNGs one after the other. I use the same approach with my slides. So if I want to see like a code snippet change in color and move to a different direction, literally what I do is I have three slides, one that changes it from one position to another, and then the other from position two to like position three, right? And I add this transition called magic move. And if you play these one after the other, to the user, it'll look like they're on the same slide, but that same thing is morphing really nicely and it looks like you've animated it really beautifully. So if that doesn't make too much sense or you folks haven't used Keynote that much, let me know and I'll try to see if I can find a better way to explain that. But that's like a huge time saver, because then you can just try to visualize the end state of what your presentation should look like and then just like blow through those pretty quickly. Another common question that came up in the tweets is, how do you handle code? Now, we're all giving technical talks, so code is like obviously something that people are coming to see, and you have to do a good job of displaying the code. I'll give a couple of high-level pointers. There's one thing. I default to at least greater than or equal to 22-point size. Now, you might think that's pretty big, but I think that's like very crucial, right? If I can make it even bigger, I usually try to make it as big as possible. I think the smallest I ever use is 18 points. And even when I use 18-point size, it's more like I'm trying to give you an overview of the code. If I have, you know, something that's displayed at 18-point size, I don't expect like the audience to ever sort of read every single line of that code. You know, it's almost like, oh, this is an overview of what you of what the code looks like. The important stuff, you got to blow up the font size as much as you can, because eventually that's what makes it really easy for the audience to sort of like understand and read what's in your code, right? You might say, well, that's kind of crazy. How do you show content or code at all, right? If it is at the sizes, if it's blown up to the size of like 30 or 40, right? There are a couple of tactics that I use. One is try to make it as brief as possible. Like, you know, with code, how sometimes you can be overly declarative. You can add the type for every single like variable that you declare. I don't do any of that. Like, you know, I try to make it as brief as possible. Because remember, you're trying to convey ideas. You're not like trying to show them precise code snippets. Because if it was precise code snippets, you can just point them to a GitHub link, right? Like, they don't need you standing in front of a projector with a keynote for that. The other tip I'll give is, sometimes it's okay to not necessarily make the code super accurate in terms of making it clean and like, you know, brief. So sometimes, you know, I might have pseudo code-ish code that I don't actually like, you know, which may not syntactically be the perfect thing. And that's fine, because in the end, all I care about is that the audience tends to understand the idea or concept. I don't care that they remember the precise code snippet, right? Like, because that's impossible. So that's like, I hope those are some tips that are helpful specifically in terms of showing code in your presentation. The other question that came up is like, how do you prepare for Q&A, right? Like a common question that people ask is like, oh, what if I'm giving the talk and somebody asks a question that I don't know the answer to, right? Trust me, that almost always can happen, you know? If you think that just because like you're, you know, using this fancy keynote and you're talking to a bunch of other developers that somehow you know more than every single person in that room, you, my friend, are like completely mistaken. I've been in talks where I've presented to people like Don Felker and, you know, Jake Wharton and Jesse Wilson. There's no way I know more than them. But like, that doesn't necessarily mean you don't like do your best, right? I think it's very important for everyone to understand that it is completely okay to say, hey, you know what? I don't know the answer to that question, but I can look it up. And if you reach out to me, I can try to find the answer, right? And that's completely fine. Most people like don't expect you to know like the answer right away. They're just looking for help like in that direction as you do, right? And because you've spent so much time on the topic, they think that you probably have run into this problem. But if you're not run into this problem, it's completely okay to say that, hey, I haven't, and I'll look into it. And if I get ideas, I'll let you know. I do this all the time. Like there are times where I was like, no, I don't really know the answer. A common thing that happens also sometimes in Q&A is like, if you can't hear the listener really well, you should immediately tell them like, hey, I don't like completely understand what you're saying. Let's take it after the presentation, right? Because if throughout that whole Q&A time, typically you only get around like 5 minutes for Q&A, right? If you only manage to answer one question because you can barely understand the question, it is like not worth the time. So this is also something that you gain with experience. If you start to realize that the person asking the question is taking a lot of time to explain the question, or they explain it once and you don't get it, and like you're going back and forth just trying to understand the question, just short circuit that thing, right? Like just tell them, hey, I'm really sorry. I don't think I can understand your question right now, but I'm going to be hanging around the conference or like around the talk for some time. Come and like find me and I'll try to answer your question. Again, totally normal and totally acceptable thing to do. The last thing I'd like to talk about with Q&A that I found super useful in my personal experience is I like to do this thing called a guided Q&A. So, you know how sometimes when you feel like you can't cover every single topic, because, you know, as crazy as it sounds, 40 minutes is not a long time. Like, you know, most talks are around 45 minutes. They do 40 minutes of talking time and 5 minutes of Q&A. That 40 minutes goes by really fast, especially for me. I can blow through that 40 minutes talking about just like 3 or 4 concepts, right? Which might be a problem, but, you know, in general, you want to be very succinct, right? And what will happen is you will land up cutting things. So what I like to do sometimes is if I've cut out certain topics that I didn't get a chance to cover in my talk, I'll throw in a quick snippet in this guided Q&A. So this guided Q&A is a set of prepared questions that I come up with that I put in a slide and I basically show it to people. So it has a very good advantage because sometimes people are shy or they're like, oh, I don't really know what question to ask. If I throw up a bunch of questions and say, hey, pick any one of these questions and I'll be more than happy to answer them. Because if it's a question that you thought about during the talk that you didn't get a chance to ask, now's a perfect time, right? This gives the benefit of like helping people remember, like in case there was something that they've forgotten. It gives you the advantage where like you can talk about this thing that you cut out from your main point. And lastly, it also gets the audience warmed up, right? Sometimes people are just shy, they don't feel like asking questions. But once people start to ask questions, it sort of like builds that momentum and then people can ask more questions. So that's just like one thing I wanted to throw in with guided Q&A. All right. So I've been going on for some time, but the last important question that I really wanted to make sure that I cover was how do you time your talk? Timing my talk is probably most notoriously the hard thing to do, you know? Especially different people have different styles of presenting. I know some people, some really good speakers, like to literally memorize their script. So when they're on stage, every single line that they're speaking has been carefully chosen, memorized, and chiseled, right? I have the utmost respect for these people, but that's not necessarily my style. Because for me, what happens is I have a horrible memory, right? So if I'm like trying to recite every single line from something that I've memorized, invariably I know I'm going to forget. And if I forget, I'm going to get nervous. And if I get nervous, I'm going to like bomb the talk, right? So because of this, typically what I do is I really understand, like, and you know, like I mentioned with my previous steps, the talking points and then my practice sessions, having gone through that multiple times, I really have a good sense of what the content that I want to speak. And because I've practiced this enough, I usually wing it on stage. So when you see me giving a conference talk, the words that I'm using are the words that just came to me in that moment of time, right? And I know this isn't typically like the style that most people like use, or like maybe some people do. It's a style that works for me. Again, just because I do it this way, it doesn't mean like, you know, like it just magically comes to me, or that like I haven't done practice. I practice a lot, trust me. I also had the advantage that even before I started doing Android development, I was into public speaking a lot. Practice is everything. If you folks haven't heard, there's this group called the Toastmasters. It has nothing to do with technical development. It's just a public speaking group. It's one of those nonprofit organizations that helps people improve their public speaking. I've been with Toastmasters for quite some time, right? They had this really interesting thing called Table Topics, where literally they pick up a bunch of topics. You come up on stage, they'll give you the topic right away, and you have to speak for 3 minutes on this topic. So, you know, I've been through a lot of practice with that kind of stuff. So I don't exactly have too much stage fright, so to speak. It's not entirely too weird. Like, I do feel nervous, and I do have butterflies in my stomach when I'm giving a talk, at least the initial portions. But that's good. I think that keeps you alert. But I don't necessarily, once I'm on stage, I don't like freeze up and like start to like think, oh no, I don't know what to say. Thankfully, I'm really grateful that I don't have that problem. But it's not because I'm just like, you know, naturally gifted. I practiced a lot. And if time permits, I'll also tell you, like, I want to also like make it clear. Sometimes people bomb, like, you know, I've bombed presentations, right? And I want to give you examples. Like, there's still some conference talks that haunt me. Like, I'm really scared of even going back and looking at these, because I know I did such a poor job. And I'm like completely fine admitting that. And I'll even like tell you some of these that I've done. But the other point that I was trying to get to was timing my talk, right? So timing your talk is really, really crucial. The way that I do the timing of my talk is, you know how I have like these slides that I've created now with my presentation themes? In each of the major section, what I do is I put in the presenter notes in big, fat, bold letters the time that I'm expected to be as I'm going through this topic. So let me explain this better. For hypothetically, say if I have just 10 slides in my keynote talk, then on slide 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on, I'll have like, okay, if this whole presentation, I have allocated 40 minutes, and the two major points in between, I need to take 10 minutes and 10 minutes, and the intro takes me 2 minutes, the first major point takes me 5 minutes, then what I do is, on the intro slide, because the whole introduction is supposed to take 2 minutes, after I'm done with that, on the slide that starts the new section, I basically put the timer number that I'm expected to see. So I set up Keynote in a way where I let it just count up. So basically it starts from zero and goes all the way to 40, 45. Typically that's how long most technical talks are. So if I'm on like, if I finished my introduction and I'm on the first major point, then I should technically see, if my introduction takes 2 minutes, I should see 2:00, right? This is super helpful because, again, sometimes what happens is when I'm going through certain points, if I get a little carried away and I feel I can explain something better and I'm winging it on stage, I want to make sure that I don't like completely take up all my time, right? So in strategic sections of my keynote slide, I'll basically put a timer. And this tells me like, hey, if I'm above the timer by a certain limit, I need to speed up, right? I need to like start pushing concepts a little faster. Or on the other hand, if I've also gone too fast, then I know I need to slow down. So then I'll take my time with a lot of like these slides. And I know this sounds a little weird, but it actually works really, really well, right? So what I do is with my slides, I add these timestamps, and I practice my whole presentation once. Usually the first time is disastrous, right? So I think I should be in minute 4. I'll end up being in minute like 10 or 12, right? And already there I know like, okay, you know, something has got to give. But this is really crucial because the other major point that you have to realize is sometimes you don't have to explain things in that much detail, right? Like I have that problem. I'll take a concept and I'll try the best way to explain it to someone and I'll end up taking 10 or 15 minutes. That just won't cut it in a technical talk because you don't have the luxury of time, right? So this almost keeps you in check. And the first time I do my whole like, timing the talk thing and I have these timestamps and I walk through the whole thing, it lands up being disastrous for me because I have to like tweak all kinds of things, right? Then I go back and I start to think, okay, what is the most, like, what are my yellow post-its, right? That's where I need to be spending the most time in explaining those concepts. So what I do then is I apportion that time, and then like the parts where I don't need to spend that much time, I brutally just like kill the time on those slides, right? I either remove a lot of slides or like, you know, I just like forget concepts. I'm like, you know what, this isn't that important. I'm not even going to talk about this in the talk. This process is again why I was telling you it doesn't make sense to polish your slides so importantly, because this, and if you remember, this is like almost at the end where I'm timing my talk, right? So at this stage, I really try to get my timing perfect. I've practiced enough now where like if I do this whole process about three times, like from top to bottom, like 40 minutes, 40 minutes, 40 minutes, or however long it takes, I tend to get a better idea of how long my talk is going to take and how I can section these things. So I go back, I change the timestamps, I make sure I adjust. Sometimes it might also be where I feel a point is really important and I really need to spend the time that I can't afford to not spend time. Then what I'll try to do is take time from other slides and shorten those slides and add it to the slide, right? So that whole process of rinse and repeat works out really well. And I can finally, like, you know, in the end, I come up with, you know, usually a really well-timed talk. So that's the process that I use. Again, if any of these things don't make sense, feel free to reach out to me. I'll be more than happy to like explain it better or give you ideas. So that pretty much rounds up a lot of the questions that people have asked. There were some also really good questions around like, oh, do you have a pre-talk checklist? You know, what's on your pre-talk checklist? I usually don't have a pre-talk checklist. The only thing I do is I drink a lot of coffee and I don't eat anything before my slide, mostly because, you know, if you eat and you tend to have like a gas buildup or something, you don't want to look comical on stage. So I tend to not do that kind of stuff. What else? I wanted to talk about the time I bombed. So there were two, in recent memory, there are two times that haunt me the most in terms of talks that I've given in the past. One was actually when I was a kid. This was really small, right? This was actually like a recitation contest where you recite something in your native language, right? So for those who don't know, I come from India and my native, my mother tongue is Tamil. Tamil is like apparently one of the most difficult languages to learn, right? So it wasn't an easy task to begin with. But I was in this talk where I was supposed to like give this recitation, this memorized recitation in Tamil. And I remember working with my mom, like, you know, I was so excited. I, you know, at home when I gave this, I gave it really well. My parents were like, oh, wow, that's wonderful. You're doing a great job. On the day of the talk, I just bombed completely. And like, this was a combination of multiple things, right? This was early on in my public speaking days, so I didn't have the confidence. So when I saw a lot of the people, I just got really shy and I bombed. And a lot of like the inflections and nuances and character in my voice that I was supposed to give, all that just flew away. And I literally just recited the whole thing as though I was reading it from a book. You know, I was sweating, I was nervous, and it landed up being a pretty disastrous. Like even to this day, thinking about it, you know, I start to sweat and like I get goosebumps because, you know, it was so bad. The other recent one I remember, I think, was maybe at a DroidCon NYC. I don't recall the exact talk, but I very well recall like giving this talk in that stage. The trouble was at the time in DroidCon NYC, it's a beautifully organized conference, by the way. So it's nothing like, it wasn't like their fault at all. It was totally my confidence and nerves. I just remember that when I was giving the talk, it was so noisy around because they only had curtains. And I think my luck, there was something where there was some commotion happening outside where there were like a lot of plates or something and broken. And it was just so distracting, right? And when you're giving a conference talk and you weave your whole presentation, you haven't like memorized anything and you rely on your points to like bridge with each other, if you lose like a lapse of concentration, it can be disastrous, right? So I remember running into one of these when I was giving my technical talk. Anyway, this has been pretty long and I'm hoping a lot of you folks got some tips from seeing how I prepare for my presentation. Again, please feel free to follow up on Twitter. And if you guys feel like, oh, there's more that you want or you enjoyed it and you want to also like find out what Don does, then just ping us. I'll make sure that I try to get him to also talk to us about how he prepares for his presentation. That's it for this episode. Wish me luck. I'm going to be speaking tomorrow morning. It's 1 a.m. here. I think I have to get up at 7. Again, I love procrastinating. So, you know, that's something that I do. I'm not too worried about it, but wish me luck. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. And we will catch you in the next episode. I also want to take a moment and thank our sponsor for this show, Vettery. Vettery is an online hiring marketplace that is changing the way people hire and get hired. You can go to vettery.com/fragmented, and if you accept a job through them, you'll get an additional $300 bonus. So it's an additional offer. It's hard to say that on audio, the domain name, so I'm going to make sure I spell it out. It's vettery.com. So it's vettery.com/fragmented. Do make sure you put the /fragmented in so that they know you came from us. Thank you so much, Vettery, for sponsoring today's show.
We'd like to thank this episode's sponsor, Bitrise. Bitrise helps you scale and build and operate better apps faster. You can integrate with all different types of tools, over 240 different services right out of the box, minimal configuration required. Bitrise is used by huge unicorn companies, from small teams all the way up to the billion users all over the place. Don't just build better apps, build a better app development process with Bitrise. If you're interested, you can sign up at go.bitrise.io/fragmented. Again, that's go.bitrise.io/fragmented, and you'll get an exquisite pair of Bitrise branded socks.
That's it for the show, folks. Fragmented is hosted by Don Felker and me, Kaushik Gopal. We edit and produce all the episodes here on Fragmented. Sarah the Amazing Jackson from the Spec Network helps with production assistance and wraps our final mix. Our theme and ad music is by the national recording artist Blueprint from Weightless Recordings. You can find more Fragmented episodes at fragmentedpodcast.com. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.